Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday we sit down and talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today we're talking about Ecclesiastes, why you should think more about death.
Here's a few passages just to set the stage for us. Ecclesiastes 3, starting in verse 18. I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and to dust all return. Chapter 5, verse 13. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is grievous evil, just as he came. So shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Chapter 7, verse 2. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart.
All right, so you can see there's a major theme in the book of Ecclesiastes related to meditating on the fact that you will die. Guys, why do you think we tend to think of it? We tend to think of this as something morbid, like we don't want to think about the fact that we're going to die. Why do you think that is? Why do people avoid wanting to think about death? Death.
It's like it's unknown. It's the one part of life that, one, we can't control, and we have really no idea what it's like. Like, what is it like after we die?
It's probably also one of people's biggest fears, right? Like the fact that I might die in an unexpected way or in a painful way or in a
Yeah.
That's like half our anxieties have to do.
How are we going to die?
Well, and the world that I'm living in is conditioning me to just stay alive and enjoy life. Yeah. So I don't need to worry about death.
I was talking to someone recently about this, and they proposed that we all sort of have this inherent fear of judgment as well. Like that deep down, even if we deny God's existence, deep down we know on the other end of death is probably some sort of judgment, and we're unsure of where that judgment will lead. So probably our association with judgment and death, it contributes to that fear too.
So Ecclesiastes wants us to actually flip that whole way of thinking on its head and say, actually, you are really, really wise to envision the day of your death, to go to the house of mourning, to go to funerals and places where people are sad about death, because there's something for you to lay to heart there. And so we want to talk in this podcast about why does the Bible encourage us to think about death? How does this actually make life more pleasing, more enjoyable, and more worth living? Why would this be something God would say, hey, instead of avoiding thinking about death, you should think about it more? Chris, you preached on Ecclesiastes, so what did you tell people?
Oh, man.
That might not be a good question.
No, that's a fair question. Let me amp up here. Well, when we preached through this several years ago, one of the main themes and points that I kept pressing on Ecclesiastes is this sense of, does life have meaning? Does life have weight? Does it have value? And if we're going to think of life kind of starting from this point of, hey, you're going to die, then that means there's a clock, that you don't have endless amounts of time. You don't just get to float through life as if nothing matters and if your actions are meaningless. But there actually is kind of this call of, hey, your life should matter, and your life, you should give your life to something worthwhile, because if you're going to die, then it puts things in perspective related to the quality of life and the value of life. So I think this question of why, you know, think about death more should in some ways cause us to reflect, what am I giving my life to? The things I get out of bed for in the morning, do they matter? Are they going to last? Or as Ecclesiastes say, is it just vanity and just going to blow away with no meaning?
Let me read from David Gibson's excellent book, Living Life Backward. which, by the way, the whole premise of his book is this is the message of Ecclesiastes. He would say the whole book is about living life backward, about starting with death, working backward from there. Here's what he says. Far from being something that makes life in the present completely pointless, future death is a light God shines on the present to change it. Death can radically enable us to enjoy life. By relativizing all that we do in our days under the sun, death can change us from people who want to control life for gain into people who find deep joy in receiving life as a gift. This is the main message of Ecclesiastes in a nutshell. Life in God's world is gift, not gain. I think that's a really profound observation that it seems like the way we are conditioned to live, especially as Western Americans, is that we're sort of like going through life, one, just trying to survive, right? So just trying to like make it to the next day. But two, to sort of amass and accumulate lots of stuff, lots of things, lots of comforts, lots of things to make life enjoyable, right? And depending on your station in life, those can be different things. That could be something as simple as a stable home to live in, or it could be, you know, a second home and a third home and a boat. And, people have all kinds of ways of packing more and more into what they think makes life meaningful. But we sort of have this way of living that says, let me amass stuff, and no one's ever thinking about like what's gonna happen to that when I die. And what Ecclesiastes says is like, hey, there's this rich guy, he had some stuff, and then guess what? Then he lost it all, and then he died. and that's called life. You
and
know,
it's you just will like, too.
Well, and just that sense of, to your point, Chris, if we step back and ask, why am I chasing all this stuff, right? What am I doing this for? It does put a different cast on. There's a way in which, I mean, call it being habituated. There's a way in which the culture we live in, there's just assumptions you buy into of just like, oh, well, this is what you're supposed to do next, you know? And I think God wants us to say, hey, when we think about, we have death on our minds, we think about the fact I'm going to die. One of my friends on Twitter retweets every week or two. There's just a little tweet that says, reminder, you're going to die. It's like a Twitter account you can subscribe to. It just like tweets you that every day. Reminder, you're going to die. And the whole point is like, hey, actually, when you have that in mind, it does relativize. That's David Gibson's word. It relativizes a bunch of things, right? All of a sudden, everything is seen relative to, hey, I'm not going to be here forever. And so mm-hmm. I have to think about like, what if I die tomorrow? What if I die next year? What if I die 50 years from now? But what am I chasing? What am I building? What am I giving myself to? What things take priority in my life? When I get to the end of my life, what am I going to be happy about what I gave myself to and what am I not? This seems like the kind of wisdom Ecclesiastes is trying to bring us into. And it's interesting that it's stark in telling us, hey, you only get this kind of wisdom by actually thinking about death.
What's interesting to me about the book of Ecclesiastes as it relates to death is even though at times it sort of speaks, it can almost come across cynical in the way that it talks about death, depending on how you read some of that. It, as you said, Bob, if you get inside that and understand that it actually is causing us to reflect on this reality of death in order to really deepen the meaning of life, because if you consider just the way we live and how much of our life is given to avoiding death. So we want, with whether it be through diet, whether it be through medication, whether it be through technology, we're trying to keep death at bay. We're trying to stay younger longer. And in some ways that, as David Gibson said, the difference between gain and gift, that if you think of life as a gift, and if you recognize that death is coming, then what is it? It actually deepens the meaning of moments and the things that we experience in life. But if we're consistently trying to avoid death, and in many ways, the reasons we're doing that is so we can get more and gain more. It actually begins to cheapen life, and it becomes more about my pleasure and more about just what I can get and what I can gain. And if we live life that way, moments, people, opportunities, just things in life, it it shallows and it hollows them out. And then again, that goes back to this vanity theme in Ecclesiastes. And so death doesn't ultimately make life meaningless in one sense. I think we have to, it's important for us to recognize that death is an enemy that Christ has overcome. But if we consider the way that we can properly use the perspective of death, it actually should deepen life. We shouldn't be trying to avoid it. Rather, we should see it as, okay, we have an appointed amount of time to live. And because of that, every moment matters, every moment counts. And so let's stop trying to avoid death. Instead, let's actually live and really steward what God has given us in the amount of time that we live.
One thing that my wife and I did a few months ago was we made out our will.
Ooh.
And when you make out your will, you're forced to reckon, one, with your death, but then there's the parts in the will where you like leave stuff to your kids or to other people, and you realize how much of the stuff that you have doesn't go in the will. Like
nobody wants it.
Like who wants the bathroom closet full of stuff? You like nobody wants that. You know, so it just that in itself was an eye opener. Like, oh man, we're in our 30s and we're making our will. That seems weird, but it's also like, oh, no, one day we're gonna die, and really all this stuff is meaningless. Mm-hmm. Like the stuff, the little things that we do have, it's really meaningless.
Going back to your original question, Bob, I think the reason that we don't like to think about death is because of how sobering it is. I've been thinking about addictive behaviors and sobriety over the last couple of days. And that Ecclesiastes 7:2 verse is really interesting. I always use that verse when I conduct a funeral. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind. And the living will lay this to heart, or the living will take it to heart, I think is what NIV says. And what's interesting about that verse is funerals are sad, and we always think that we're at a funeral because of we've lost a loved one. And so that's what the environment feels like, and that's what everybody talks about. But I think funerals are sad because of this verse where the living are actually taking to heart death. Mm. They're confronted with death, and it's sobering. And I don't like sobriety. I would much rather be numb. I would much rather be entertained or just somehow numbed out a little bit. And so as we've entered into Ecclesiastes, that's actually where I found myself. Eswine does a good job of capturing some of that, you know, like why we're drawn to these particular books, but not necessarily the Psalms or Ecclesiastes, because of he does a brilliant Eswine way of saying why we like Psalms and Ecclesiastes, but at the same time don't like it too much because of the sobriety that it brings.
Death is so humbling. I mean, that passage in chapter 3 that you read, that men are but beasts.
You're going to die, and so is your dog.
Yeah, I mean, there's this sense, it exposes our lack of control because we spend so much time trying to avoid death. And I always chuckle every time I see a science article saying that, oh, scientists are close to the key to preventing death from ever happening or from aging. And I just laugh. I'm like, no, there's no way that we can avoid, as try as we might, we don't have that much control. And that's what death consistently reminds us, is we do not have the control we think we have and the control we're after. And, you know, not to, you know, make every podcast about COVID, but is that not what's happening? It has been happening over the past several months, is just our lack of control in the world, and how a virus that we can't control, and all the predictions and all the models, and no matter how hard we try, it's still, people are still dying. It's humans do not like to be confronted with our limitations and being humbled before forces greater than us.
So it's interesting. The next verse after chapter 7, verse 2, Dusty, the one you read, this is wisdom literature has this way of sort of being counterintuitive. It goes on to say, after it says, hey, it's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting, it says, sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face, the heart is made glad. So the question it makes you ask is, how is sorrow better than laughter? How is it that sadness can make me glad? And I think it's getting at what you're saying, Chris, that sadness has a way of actually freeing me to enjoy life. Mm. Because instead of trying to hedge off or fence off what I know is coming, I'm free to say, like, well, we're all going to die. So let's enjoy life while we're here. Like, let's, you know, there's a way in which that brings a lightness and a freedom. I'm not anxious, burdened, fretting about death and how it's going to come and if it's going to come and when it's going to come and how I hold it off. But there's just a sense of like, I mean, this is why I think people who are grounded in biblical wisdom tend to be some really joyful people. They just tend to be people who like, they just enjoy life and they're not too worried about what they're going to die of and you know, when they're going to die. They're not fretting and nervous about that. There's a sense of they've reckoned with that. I talked to a guy, I was at a wedding a few weeks ago and ran into a guy that I've known for years who's been a faithful Christian in our city for a long time. He's probably 60 years old now, really joyful guy, has had some adversity throughout life. And I was chatting with him about coronavirus. He was like, well, I looked at my wife and here's what I told her when this whole thing started. I said, well, one of three things is going to happen. We're not going to get it. We're going to get it and die, or we're going to get it and recover. He's like, I'm good with any of those things. That's all fine. You know? And I was just like, that's a guy who like, he's just saying, hey, one of these three things could happen. I'm not going to fret about whether it's the one I don't want. I'm just going to say, well, I could die, but oh well. You know, and he's just like a very jolly, warm-hearted kind of person who is not weighed down by the possibility of that happening.
Yeah, to ask the question, can we experience true joy on this side of eternity, fretting and worrying and being distracted or occupied with trying to stop death? But it seems like what scripture says and, you know, what that man's living out is, you know, true joy is acknowledging, like, I'm going to die. That's the reality that I live under the sun. And one day I won't ever have to fear death again. Naked as we came, one will spread our ashes round the yard.
When I read Ecclesiastes 7, I think of the Pixar movie Inside Out. And if you're familiar with the movie, the whole point of it is this growth in emotional maturity that embraces both joy and sadness and how when those two things are experienced together, there's a deeper emotional life and greater joy. And to your point, Bob, I think the capacity to experience sadness is also a greater capacity to experience joy. And so in some ways, Ecclesiastes is expressing emotional maturity, maybe even counterintuitive emotional maturity. There might be some parts of Ecclesiastes that you wonder if that's emotionally mature, but there is a depth of emotional maturity spelled out here, I think, especially in chapter 7. But again, the reality of embracing death and recognizing death, how it deepens just our own emotional health in how we engage the world.
That's good. So it's basically read Ecclesiastes and watch Pixar.
There you go.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Two keys to life.
It's interesting to think about.
Sounds like a way of enjoying life too.
It's interesting to think about all of this conversation so far in Ecclesiastes with coronavirus lurking in the background, which in our culture has just been this whole like, oh no,
we're going to die.
We actually might die. and we might not get to control it, which nobody is controlling their own death, but yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But we've become preoccupied with the lie that we can, right?
And most of our economy is driven by various ways of control, various means of control, and especially of controlling and hedging against our own death and our own mortality. Because death is just the end of a long process of decline. you're mortal, and your body begins life building itself, and then it starts tearing itself down. And some of that, that's what you sense in some of the sort of cynicism of Ecclesiastes, that whole passage you read in chapter 3, Chris, about man and beast. You know, it's just like, well, there's an inevitability to that. And like you said, Christ has conquered death, but on this side of new heavens and new earth, this is our lot. Our lot is we're going to be conquered by mortality and death. Mm.
So it'd be interesting to reverse engineer my life from death and to come to terms with it, settle into it, start enjoying life here, but also enjoy it on purpose.
Hey, you did a talk with great joy. You did a talk recently about not exactly this, but about some reverse engineering stuff. And it kind of had some, you threw out some good questions for people to think about that kind of were driven by that sort of a paradigm, like starting with the end in mind and saying, what kind of legacy do I want to have? What kind of family do I, you know, to my kids and grandkids and whoever, however long God gives me, what do I want to be true of my heritage?
Yeah. Yeah. What I was mentioning there, specifically in that talk was, we use this phrase, or I do at least, our days determine our decades. But we don't tend to think in decades. But parents definitely don't think about that. We just tend to, if you're a parent, you're thinking, okay, what do I got to do right now? Shove some mac and cheese down this kid's throat, keep him alive, get him an education, you know, change the diaper maybe. But we're not thinking about who is this person becoming when they're 30. And the reality is the Lord has only given you this child for a really short time. And so you got to make the most of those years because that person's going to go on and live, hopefully, ideally, a pretty long life way after they're in your house, right? So you're shaping their character is the point.
Yeah.
I think about this too when I preached on Psalm 1. I think it was Psalm 1. And I was confronted with, in my family, well, Bob, your grandfather recently died at 100. I haven't had a grandfather die at 100. Mostly because they die in their 70s or 80s. And so I've actually been confronted with that and thought, okay, what's it going to look like for me? And then usually in the 50s, 60s, the eyesight starts to go in my family, in all males, both on my mom's side and my dad's side. So that has scared me more than death because I've actually thought like, I don't want to slowly lose my eyesight and not be able to read. But when it came to Psalm 1 and preaching on Psalm 1 years ago, that Psalm 1 verse 2, but his delight is in the law of the Lord and on his law he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water. When I was getting ready to preach on that, I was confronted with, oh man, I want to be able to meditate on the law day and night, which means I got to memorize it. I got to get it into me now because I might not be able to always read it. I might not have the privilege of just grabbing my Bible and reading it. And so anyway, those are the kinds of things that I feel like we need to reverse engineer, not out of fear necessarily, but more out of like, okay, let's have some real talk here.
Yeah.
Here's what it looks like in my family, eyesight-wise. Let's have that conversation. Hey, let's talk about death.
There's a podcast called the Daily Liturgy Podcast that you might find useful in the future.
Yeah, that is useful. I need y'all to make sure that stays on the air for free.
Hey, if you're a listener, you need to think more about death. That's what Ecclesiastes is telling you. Reverse engineer your life. Start by thinking about the fact that you're going to die. I think there's some implications this has for us. I think this actually has stewardship implications, right? If you think about what drives American consumerism, it's buy more, use more, consume more, have more, get more. And if we have a biblical view of life that starts by saying, I'm not taking anything with me anyway. So I want to wisely, like you're saying, Mike, create a will, maybe leave some stuff to my kids, maybe, you know, leave them in a good place. But I don't need to be amassing a bunch of stuff right now. In fact, what I need to be doing is living with as much generosity as possible toward the Lord and toward others, because that's what actually makes life meaningful, right? Yeah. I can't enjoy anything beyond the moment of death. But if I'm a generous person, the legacy I leave and the way I bless others will continue to bless them long after my death. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea of why would I tithe? Why would I invest in the Lord's work? Why would I give money away to kingdom causes and to people in need? Well, the answer to that has a lot to do with the reality of death and the reality that none of that outlasts my death anyway. I think there's also some ethical implications here. I mean, it's interesting to think about, you know, you mentioned, Chris, like the ways that doctors often will say, oh, we're cheating death. I know there's a big thing in Silicon Valley right now of people trying to sort of like tech out on like, how can I prolong my life through like life hacks, right? So certain kinds of nutrition and sleep. And it's like everybody, all the Silicon Valley people are trying now to sort of basically hack human existence and say, how can we, through our means of control, make ourselves live as long as possible? I'm just thinking about like, man, there's a certain kind of, there's a fine line, I think, for Christians between like living responsibly, taking care of your health, taking care of your diet, you know, being wise. But then also there's this whole thing our culture wants to pull us into of like trying to stay young, be young, look young as long as possible. That can be fashion. That can be plastic surgery. That can be, right, all kinds of these things that we can spend money and time and energy on that are actually sort of designed to cheat death a little bit. And again, I think there's some some gray area. There's some room for discernment and wisdom. But I just think, man, one of the implications for our lives about living with the end in mind ought to be, man, we shouldn't waste a whole lot of money on stuff that's designed to make us feel, look, or be younger than we actually are, right? There's a sense of like a gray head is a crown of wisdom. There's this sense of growing into the age that we are in a meaningful way that that embraces it as gift. To go back to the David Gibson quote, like, all right, hey, you know what? The season of life I'm in, I'm not as young and energetic as I once was, but there's part of there, that's a certain kind of gift. And so embracing that has implications. So I'm sure there are many others, but those are a few implications that come to mind just as I think about what Ecclesiastes is urging us toward here. So, hey, guys, think a lot more about death.
I'm on it.
Okay.
On it.
Maybe sign up for that Twitter reminder, Mike, that you're gonna die.
I'm gonna.
Just get that every day. Yep. Just, hey, you're gonna die.
I'll start texting you guys and reminding you.
I was gonna say, this might be a way that we can just encourage each other. Say, hey, you know what? You're gonna die. So let's live with the end in mind.
With joy, by the way.
Yeah.
Get happy about it.
I'll text it with a smiley emoji.
Yeah.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission and death. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We always love to hear from you, the listeners. So send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com, and we'll see you again next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation.